Who were you on the phone to this morning?
A lot of people have been calling me. I actually can't even keep track of all the numbers. And so today I just got asked to go talk in front of Congress just a moment ago. So people are just calling me saying, hey, we want some information. Can you tell us about this? We're just trying to gather information. And for instance, today someone just called me and said, hey, we have a meeting we'd like you to testify in front of Congress January 21st. So I'll see if I'll do that.
Right. So it's starting to hit the bigger levels of sort of real law, real government now.
Yeah. I mean, within just one day of me posting my video, well, it got over 100 million views in 72 hours. But within the first day alone, you had Elon Musk retweet it. You had J.D. Vance retweet it. You had quite literally every major politician retweet it. The next morning, Cash Patel puts out a post on X about it. And then that same day, Attorney General Pam Bondi also puts out a post mentioning my name in that video. Same day, Mike Johnson as well. So it spread across the entire internet, and it's the most viral video, the expose on fraud in Minnesota. It's the most viral video by anybody not named Mr. Beast in an expose format. Over 100 million views in 72 hours.
Did you end Tim Walz?
I did end Tim Walz. He is no longer running for re-election of governor.
Tell me the story, though.
So Tim Walz, everyone knows him. He was almost the vice president of the United States. And he has a record going on in Minnesota talking about fraud. Ever since 2019, he's known about fraud. He's been talking about how they've been fighting fraud. And he's been enabling this fraud to happen. And so I go and make this video. And I showed the fraud happening. And you would think people would be like, oh, amazing. This kid just showed that fraud's happening. Instead, Tim Walz goes on TV. He calls me a white supremacist, calls me far right, and he also calls me a delusional conspiracy theorist.
Are you any of those things?
No. And so then Tim Walz, after calling me all of that, he drops out of running for re-election of governor. So I was right. I show people the truth. And Tim Walz, he couldn't handle it. So therefore, he went to deflecting mechanisms of calling me far right, delusional conspiracist, and a white supremacist when I was just talking about fraud.
You think that the reason that he's not running for re-election is exclusively because of this story?
Yeah, 100%. He knows the baggage just so much that he can't run from it. And he's hoping probably people would think less of it. And so he's going to step aside and not run for re-election.
How much is he culpable? Because Minnesota's a big state. There's lots of stuff going on. He had an election campaign to look after not long ago. Is it his job to be paying attention directly to this sort of stuff?
He's obviously part of it. There's obviously larger communities like the DHS inside of Minnesota.
What's the DHS, sorry?
The Department of, the Department of Homeland Security. But then you also have DHS that receives the money, and they kind of give the money to the welfare, Medicaid programs, everything like that.
So not entirely unculpable then?
No, I mean, his office kind of, he's said it himself, the buck stops with him. He said that multiple times, and he's known about the fraud forever.
It is an interesting challenge, right? Because you have some people, anybody that is running for office wants to show I've got agency and I make things happen inside of my state. And it kind of sounds powerful, ubermenschy to say the buck stops with me. But when it turns out that the buck is kind of messy and on fire and deserves investigation, you become culpable for the promises that you've made in the past.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, he knew about it. He knows that there's daycares all around Minnesota. He actually bragged about that in a debate with Tim Walz. He said, you can go visit him. I visited him. There was no kids.
Give me the story from the start of how this came about.
So last June, every week for the past 100 weeks, I've been making YouTube videos about something happening in the US or other country. And so back last June, I went to Minnesota to make a video about the rise of Islam, because I've heard how mosques were replacing Christian churches and how the Somali population was growing. And so I wanted to go do a video on the rise of Islam. And while I'm there, I'm talking with locals and...
Ahora continuamos con el podcast. Pero antes, ¿sabías que solo uno de cada cinco oyentes llega al final de un episodio? Por eso, resumimos tus podcasts favoritos. Entra en nuestra web para saber más.
They're like, Nick, you have to do a video on the fraud. There's these daycares, there's these adult daycares, there's assisted living homes popping up right next door to us, and they're all ran by Somalians. You need to do a video on the fraud. And I said, well, I can't just come and just paint fraud to be happening and bring no evidence. So I made my video about the rise of Islam, and I saw it firsthand. I saw communities that had been overtaken by Somalians. Actually, me and my mom was my camera woman for that video. She comes with me on a lot of trips. we got jumped in Cedar Riverside. They snatched the camera and they threatened me and my mom. And so after that, Somalians inside of Cedar Riverside, because inside there, they also have rivalry gangs and there's a kind of a whole gang thing going on inside of these Somalian communities. And so I knew there was something there. And I went back home and I kept trying to do my own investigation to get down to the fraud. And I couldn't really get the number specifically. And then a man by the name of David, who's in the video, he reaches out to me and he says, Nick, I have all the information. I've been researching this for years.
Why did he reach out to you?
Yeah, so he's been trying to get the story out for years.
But did he reach out to you before you did your documentary?
Well, he had seen some of my other videos on YouTube as well. So he kind of just knew maybe this kid would be interested because he's been trying to get it from local people. And local news has been reporting on the fraud for years. So they've been reporting on it for years, but it's never blown up on a national level. And this man, David, had all the numbers. Somebody from inside the Capitol had given him the information on the CCAP funding, which is federal and state money that goes to these programs. It's called, the Child Care Assistance Program. So he had all the information and he said, Nick, I have been looking into this for years and I have never seen a single child at one of these daycares. And so we went and made this video about the fraud that was taking place.
When did you make it?
December 16th is when we filmed it.
Oh, wow. So you really turned it around quickly.
Yeah. Within just a few weeks. And so I had no idea. I thought we were just going to go to these daycares and I thought you'd be able to open up the door and go to the reception, receive a brochure for your child. And that the first daycare we go to, it's a one building that has two of the same daycares inside of it. It was named Mako and there's another one that's also inside of that daycare. They had both been receiving money from the government, upwards of $5 million. And it was strange because all the windows were blacked out. The sign above it said open 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. You open the door, nobody would answer. You ring the doorbell, nobody answers. And then a Somalian woman comes up and we're asking her, where's the kids at? She says, I don't know. I was like, what the heck? Like, what's wrong with these daycares?
She came out of the...
She drove into the parking lot and she went into a store next door. And I was like, what the heck is going on with these daycares? That was weird. Okay, let's go to the next one. Let's see what happens. We go to the next one. They also received $1 million. They're licensed for 40 children. All the windows were completely blacked out. I knock on the door and I hear a lady talk. And I said, well, hey, I'm trying to enroll my son, little Joey, into daycare. And she's like, no. And she wouldn't give me any more information. And so you'd think that even if they didn't want to talk with me, that they would maybe give you a brochure, right? Just to kind of show that they're actually a legit daycare. And they're licensed for 40 children. It's funny because then after that, I post my video. Local news, CBS then tells that daycare they're going to go and they film a video and there's 12 kids inside the daycare. Well, either way.
It's still not 40.
What?
It's still not 40.
Yeah, it's still not 40. So what's the point of giving them $1 million? And so I believe that's fraudulent. And then we go to the next daycare and this one had received $3.45 million.
Can I ask about where this is? You mentioned Cedar Park.
Cedar Riverside, that's like the well-known community inside of Minneapolis.
Before diving deeper into the issues surrounding childcare funding in Minnesota, it's crucial to note that the previous discussion highlighted the proximity to significant events like George Floyd's. This troubling context sets the stage for understanding the systemic failures as our conversation shifts to uncover shocking examples of daycare fraud and the complexities of funding allocations.
$3.45 million. And this lady opens the door. I kept all my security. I kept other vans. I put David kind of far to the side. I was like, all right, we're going to have a genuine interaction. I don't want anyone to make any excuses. So this lady opens up the door. And I say, hey, I want to enroll my son, little Joey. And she says, no. I'm like, well, can I at least get a brochure? She says, no. I said, would my son have friends here? She said, no. And there were no kids, no snow, no footprints in the snow. And she was the only one there, broad daylight, I believe, on December 16th, which I believe was a Tuesday. There should be children inside the daycare.
What time?
We were there. Hers was around 12, I believe. And then... also Quality Learning Center. This one is so bad because they had received $1.9 million. They had over 90 violations and they're just a few blocks away from downtown Minneapolis, just a few blocks away from where the Timberwolves play. And their sign literally said Quality Learning Center. Like imagine that. You're trying to teach children to learn, but you can't even spell learning right on your
son. Hadn't that been incorrect for 9 years or something?
For many years.
Yeah.
Because they were originally inside on the road, and then they like cut out this door, and they opened up a restaurant where Ilhan Omar has photos of her outside that same restaurant. And the owner also has photos with her and the mayor. And the guy who came out saying that my video was false, he has videos of him partying with the mayor of Minneapolis. Like, it's all intertwined. And so there's all this fraud happening. Millions of dollars are being given out to these daycares. And then on top of that, you have adult daycares. You have autism centers.
Adult daycares?
Yes.
What is that?
Adult daycares. Place to for adults to get taken care of.
People with special needs?
I don't know. There's no
way. Okay, how do you advertise an adult daycare? What is it? It's literally called adult daycare?
Adult daycare. And then you have assisted living. So that's kind of confusing. You have adult daycare and you have assisted living.
Right. Yeah, because they can't be the same thing if you've separated them out. And if you've got stuff, because there's like loads of stuff happening with autism.
Autism.
Yeah.
Like, there was not just a random surge in autism, but there was an increase from $1 million to $200 million in funding.
For autism?
For autism.
In Minnesota?
In Minnesota.
$200 million.
Yes.
Wow.
In 2024, there's $200 million.
Compared with?
I think in 2017, there's $1 million.
Oh, wow. So it's in, what, 7 years?
Yeah. So just in a short period of time, it went from $1 million to $200 million. Autism wasn't just springing up like that. And you didn't need to prove that, like, you didn't need a license. Like, it came out just the other day that, like, the Biden administration opened up these systems and you didn't have to really prove much in order to get the funding.
Hmm.
And so a lot of people just took advantage.
Yeah, I think my first question is, what is it about Minnesota, or Minneapolis in particular, and the bylaws and the small print which has caused this particular scheme to flourish?
Yeah, it doesn't really make much sense why Somalians would go to Minnesota. Somalia, the temperature and the climate's completely different than Minnesota. I think people realize, like, Minnesota's known for being Minnesota nice. Everyone was accepting. They brought all these refugees. And it wasn't a problem until it became a problem. And so then you get politicians like Tim Walz and the mayor, Little Fry over there, who start panhandling to the Somalian community, who's just a small percentage of the population there. It's about anywhere from 80 to 200,000. No one exactly knows. The ranges are from 80 to 200,000 people.
So it's not a big number of people.
No, it's not. But they go into certain areas and they pretty much move out any other race or religion, and it just becomes a Somalian area. And so it's not, so it becomes an issue when you don't feel like it's still your city, or you don't feel like you're being represented by your politicians. And so Tim Walz and Ilhan Omar, they kind of started panhandling to this group of immigrants, one for votes, and then also, they attached on to the welfare programs. I believe 81% of Somalians in Minnesota are on welfare. 89% of the fraud being committed by people inside Minnesota is by Somalians. Mm. And then, if you come out and speak against the fraud, you'll be called a white supremacist, like Tim Walz did with me. He'll call you far right. He'll call you a delusional conspiracy theorist. And so, all this political correctness made it to where people kind of feel like they couldn't speak out. That's why David, he had been trying for years to get the story out, to tell people, and I was one of the only people who would listen to him and give him the time of the day to go show what was happening.
So I understand that you've got this unusual microcosm of a very particular demographic in a very tightly dense area. What I don't understand is, what is it about Minnesota? Tim Walz has been saying, you can come here, they're kind of nice, but there has to be a specific loophole or legal. I mean, is this available everywhere? If I just dumped 200,000 people from one particularly innovative culture into an area, would they be able to scheme and do that across the whole country?
Yeah, well, I talked to some of the Somalians and they tell me, well, if one Somalian moves, we all move, essentially. So like, they kind of move in these groups. So there's like groups of them in Texas, there's groups of them in Minnesota. And I think they just saw how much money you can make from these welfare programs. They're going unchecked. I mean, Quality Learning Center, they had 90 violations.
Stop calling it Quality Learning Center.
That's what it is. Quality Learning Center. And they leered their lesson.
Okay. Can you explain to me the exact journey of a dollar, where it comes from, where it goes to, and what you think is going on. I imagine that there's a variety of different paths that it can take, but money has to come from somewhere, go to somewhere, get fed back to some. What's the story there?
Yeah. So for instance, with childcare, there's this thing called the HHS, and that's a federal. It's Health and Human Services. So they allocate a certain amount of funds to stuff like childcare. For instance, they allocated $185 million to childcare, and then that money, you then go submit, you go get licensed for your daycare, and then you say, we want this many children, and then you're able to receive this money for these daycares because it's part of their, like Tim Walz openly bragged, even on X and in the debate with J.D. Vance, like, we're going to give childcare and daycare a raise. Like, why would you do that? Mm. There's a lot of hardworking parents that are paying to put their kid in childcare. And so that's kind of how they go about making their money. And then they realize, well, daycare is great. Let's do adult daycare. Let's do assisted living.
So you've got this fund that can help to pay for daycare, but somebody needs to create a business and file a business. And what's the structure of what's going on the ground there? Who's working there? Are they being paid in cash? Are they being paid?
Yes. So that's kind of the problem right now. That's why the federal government has surged Minnesota with investigators to figure out what's actually happening, because it's been like this kind of weird liquid thing where no one really knows. And so that's kind of the problem. That's why you're seeing it's kind of hard to track down what's actually happening.
You know that there's money going in, but you're unsure where it's coming from or how it's being distributed.
Yeah. So I went to a fraud committee meeting, and this one lady, she's a Republican representative for the state, she laid out one of these frauds that was happening. You had one man, he also ran a daycare, assisted living, and he had multiple violations, but the government kept giving him money. And so somebody from inside the state, DHS, was cutting the checks, and they continued to give these people money even though they're violating and having violations. And so that's why they had been enabling this fraud to happen for so long.
Understanding the serious allegations against Tim Walz and the troubling dynamics surrounding the childcare fraud in Minnesota is crucial. The gravity of these issues fuels the urgency in Nick's narrative as he dives into conversations with various stakeholders, showcasing the real-life implications of fraud and community reactions in his compelling exposé.
And that's why my video, I think, resonated with so many people, because I was showing and I was talking to quite literally everybody, from the daycare owner to the man who's been doing his own investigation for years, to the guy who's been living in Minneapolis for 8 years, who's never seen a kid inside a quality learning center, and then the crazy liberal who's yelling at me, telling me I'm ICE. So I'll talk to everybody, and I'll go to these protests, and I'll do these live streams, and I'll talk to the protesters, and I just let people talk. And if they want to come after me, so be it. I'm there to give each and every single person I interview an opportunity to explain what they're doing, what they think, and ultimately why they're behind the cause that they're behind.
Why do you think it is that the mainstream press had such a problem with it? Is it just a good optics to seem like you're sort of fighting for the underdog brown person? Or is there something deeper going on?
I think it's because they're trying to delegitimize me, because I pose a threat to everything that they are. I pose a threat to their viewership, to their dollars, to their fan base. And so why would they want me to get credit for a story that they should have been reporting on? They have thousands of employees. I have me and myself.
And your mom.
My mom. And that's pretty much it. I'll have my cameraman. Yeah. And that's it. And we just did over 100 million views on an expose that they should have covered as well. Mm. But instead they come after me. So I think that's kind of why. And so that's why you're seeing that. And they know that the mainstream media, it's dying. Like, their viewership is getting less and less each and every single year. And so if they can come in and they find somebody like me who goes and does this story, gets way more views than they did, why would they want to say, oh, good job, Nick Shirley. Like, that's amazing reporting you just did. Let's do everything to make people know that, at least try to make them know that whatever Nick Shirley did was not true. But it was true.
Yeah, there's certainly a rivalry between independent and legacy media. In that way, I would say, at least, again, the immediate benefit that these people get, in the same way as the immediate benefit that Tim Walz perhaps got, is the optics. That if you're not seen to be pushing back against this, you seem to be implicitly agreeing with and endorsing the worst possible explanation of why you could have done it. That you don't like brown people. That you're the secret agent for Donald Trump. That you're a Fed. That you're a whatever. I think that to me makes the most sense. But I don't disagree that for the first time ever, it was really funny. There was some gossip in the evidence-based fitness community a couple of months ago. And it was the first time that I'd ever seen the press commenting on a really niche internet story. So typically, YouTubers, we would react to shit that happened in the real world or that's in the press. Press does an investigation, we talk about it, right? Today in the New York Times, did you see the article about such and such? This was the first time where it happened the other way around. It was like some niche internet beef had gotten sufficiently big that the press had gone, oh, that's a story that we can have. And that was when I really realized that sort of the flow of traffic is moving in the other direction. It very much is that the independent media stuff. I'm still hesitant about like completely sucking off everybody who's doing independent stuff. Mainstream press still gets a ton of reach in places that we simply can't. Like we just can't reach most of middle America soccer mom people. They're not going to hit your algo, no matter how many times Elon Musk retweets it. The only way it works is if NPR pick up on Musk's tweet. But there is definitely a rivalry going on. And as with any sort of dying institution, it tends to not go down without a fight.
There's a rivalry going on and it's competition at the end of the day for them. They're trying to keep up with people like me and you. I mean, we're able to run our operatives a lot smoother and smaller than they are. Just think about what they have to do to go out and get a story. They have to book a cameraman. They have to carry around this huge backpack. They have to get approval from the senior editor. And then when they want to post the video, then it goes through two different hands and then they have to approve it. And then it goes live versus me. I book my flight. I get to the location. I film, I edit, and I post.
Well, the frictionlessness is a massive advantage. It's why you were able to basically turn it around in 10 days. The criticism of that would be, well, because you're not going through the appropriate amount of scrutiny with having higher levels, this could cause, there will be an error, some sort of an implication error or many in the video that you put out and in the next one and in every podcast that I have ever done, because it's not going to go through an entire team of fact checkers. I think the reason that people feel particularly aggrieved when the mainstream media make errors, it's the same reason that you feel super pissed if you ever to see a cop texting while driving. Like, hey, you're supposed to enforce the law. Because you enforce the law, you're kind of meant to adhere to it more rigorously than we are. But, you know, the concern that people have about citizen journalism is that it's fast and loose with the facts, and if it just gets clicks, it doesn't matter. So I think, you know, if I was to give you a piece of advice, I think certainly as you move forward, which you're probably already doing, you need to, unfortunately, become increasingly squeaky clean with your own fact-checking as you go on, because the amount of scrutiny, the amount of eyeballs now is just going to keep getting more and more. And if you fuck up, what's going to happen is that's going to be used. That is going to be a microcosm to try and smear the rest of the world. Oh, see the error that was in there? Actually, he's not as such and such. And then that's the rest of it.
I mean, I've made my mistakes too. And when you're going through making a video like that, the editing process is long and that takes a lot of time to edit. So you're also doing fact checks as well when you're editing it, because I edit all my videos. I'm also going through, and if something's not true, I'm going to call it out for what it is. And everything in that video that I posted was true. And have I made mistakes before? Yeah, I have. I'm 23 years old and I've been doing this sort of journalism for about 2 years now. Like, I'm not going to say I've never made mistakes, but in this case of the Minnesota fraud video, it's been proven to be completely true. Not only by me, but by the government, by the locals. I mean, Quality Learning Center, it just got shut down the other day, got closed on January 6th.
With fraud allegations growing, the impetus for federal investigation has intensified, culminating in the vice president's announcement of a new assistant attorney general role. This unprecedented move signals a significant shift in addressing fraud, prompting discussions on its implications. What does this mean for future investigations and accountability in the system? Let's explore.
It's not new that we've been being defrauded. It's a complete result of my video showing that fraud's taking place to the point where the Vice President of the United States needs to create a new role for Assistant Attorney General to go after fraud. It's crazy, actually.
Dude.
I think about that. Like, have you ever seen a video? We've been there's been lots of reports for years. Has there ever been a point in time where they froze funding, sent in feds to launch investigations and created a new job?
I was thinking about some stuff maybe during COVID where people that had scrutiny around mask efficacy, transmission rates, vaccines stuff, perhaps, but it was nowhere near as direct. It was much more kind of little pebbles here and there as opposed to this massive boulder that's just created it. Yeah, dude, I mean, this could be the beginning of a really huge tsunami of investigations around this stuff. So, Nick Shirley, ladies and gentlemen, dude, get some sleep for me, please.
Do I look tired?
No, I just want you to sleep. I think that it's important for you to sleep so that you can keep on doing it. You look fantastic. I think the other lesson, at least to take away that I have from this, is that you cranked out a video a week for 2 years and then you had the one that hit. And that's kind of the way that it tends to. Not that you hadn't accumulated an audience before, but this is the one that really, really hit. So.
Yeah, I think it's just like, I remember listening to your podcast with Hormozy, and it's just like, you need to treat yourself. I remember one thing that really struck to me is he's like, you need to treat yourself like you're the best athlete and whatever it may be, whether it be making YouTube videos or making sure you're the best person at your job, at wherever it may be. But like, I've dedicated essentially all my time in the past few years of my life to making these videos and creating conversation, and it wasn't a surprise that it just happened to be the fact that I made this video. It was just inevitable that something
some
was going
to happen. Yeah, dude. Yeah, that's the way it works. All right, where should people go? Keep up to date with your stuff, support you, do all the rest of the things.
Nick Shirley on all platforms. Shirley Defense if you want a leering hoodie to leer a little bit. But yeah, just Nick Shirley everywhere.
Heck yeah. Nick, I appreciate you. Thank you, man.
Thank you. Got any advice for me?
Get some sleep. I think that's important. Honestly, dude, get some sleep and go for walks. We'll just keep you fresh. What else advice would I give you?
You're a wise guy.
I think you need to try and delegate as quickly as possible, in order to allow you to keep doing the thing that you're the best at, because the sheer volume of inflow that you're going to get is going to cause you to miss the stuff that you really need. So what you could do with is an assistant who is just with you at all times. And again, this is going to be hard because you need the money and you're going to get it funded from something, but assuming that you had the resources to do it, and fuck me, text Elon. I'm sure he can spare a couple of mil. Somebody who's just always on your phone and is scrutinizing everything, sending it through a team. You probably need, I don't know, 2 or 3 people that would be really great to run in the background. And then it means that you can focus on, where am I going to go? What's the story? How's the edit look? So I would look to delegate. I would definitely get some rest as best I could. And I would see this period as kind of like your Super Bowl, because you're not going to be, you may be, but the likelihood is that this is the most relevant that you're ever going to be. So I think continuing to put your foot on the gas, which is why getting the sleep as best you can is good, so that you can keep on going pretty hard. Keep on publishing at a rapid clip. Be careful about what you say. You don't want to have some horrible soundbite of you saying something horrendous that kind of smears the rest of your image, because that's exactly what opponents are going to look for. And I would say keep on reaching out to people, because it's evident that people want to support your work. So if you have the desire to try and make something happen, just keep on. You've already got like the shameless DM gene that I also have, which is good.
That's all for today. Visit podsummarizer.xyz and start creating summaries of your own podcast in just seconds. Don't miss it.